Okay, who are you?
Keith Brock.
And Keith, what do you do?
I am the founder and president and COO of Modus Digital.
And who is Modus?
Modus is primarily a motion capture studio. And so we have the capability to do 3D animation, cinematics, modeling, game design, you name it. But the tip of the spear for Modus Digital is definitely motion capture.
What is motion capture? What does that mean? Why do you specialize in that?
Motion capture is really the recording of movement, of motion. Hence the name of Modus is Latin for motion, where we got the name of our company from. And it's really taking motion, storing it in a digital format, a data that can then be mapped onto CG characters, etc., 3D characters, and then almost act as the puppet strings for a puppet.
We're here in North Texas, North Dallas, and up here. Why here? Why not L.A.?
Well, a couple of prime reasons for us is, number one, the cost of living in L.A. I think everyone knows it's pretty stratospheric. But on a more serious note is that we feel that Texas, number one, has so much to offer, especially in the lines of gaming and game development. And we think that there's so much happening in North Texas, obviously so much happening in Austin, where it's now the number one MMO capital of the world. So if any massive multiplayer online game development is happening, it's taking place in Austin. So that's exciting for us. And knowing the number of studios that are here in North Texas, Dallas, Plano, et cetera.
Yes, up here you got who? Id, Gearbox, Ensemble
Studios, you name it, right? And so
wow.
Mega Squad, there's a lot of excitement in North Texas, and it's really specifically focused on entertainment and electronic gaming. So we are doing things with Mega Squad. We're doing things with Gearbox Software. We're doing some things with J Animation. We're doing some things hopefully here in the not-too-distant future with Ensemble Studios.
So how about, so today you mentioned that we might be able to see like how a specific cartoon was made. What is this cartoon?
Yeah, so that's a show that was created for Daystar, a faith-based network out of Dallas, North Texas. And it's basically a show that was created for values for children, for youth, etc. And it's called Captain Macaroni. And there are multiple characters, obviously, in it, from a seafaring captain's first mate, a chicken, and multiple characters that are make up and comprise of the crew. And it's basically a Captain Macaroni being the good guy, dealing with his arch nemesis, Captain Courageous, which is usually pronounced with a thick French accent as carrot juice. So just a little play on that. So you know, hopefully, you know, usually children don't like carrot juice. So it's already something they can associate with as being a bad
thing. I don't think I've tried to feed my kids carrot juice yet, but this might be the spur to just see how they react.
Exactly. They're going to see the hardware that we use, the software that we use. The way we use our Microsoft technologies to do what we do every day. You know, Vista Ultimate X64 is our platform of choice. And all of our workstations, all the 3D animation that is created, the modeling, et cetera, is all done utilizing that platform. And so you're going to be able to see that. You're going to be able to see the way we do certain motion capture. You're going to be able to see what we feel makes us incredibly unique in the motion capture space for some of the software that we've developed that is associated with other products that are used to drive our motion camera systems. You're going to see a lot.
Didn't you say that you're one of the largest in this area? Or?
Well, yeah, absolutely. So as far as there's two ways you can look at that. You can look at it as size, a facility. We are a little over 12,500 square feet, once again, here in North Texas. And our mocap space, dedicated mocap space, is a little over 92 feet. And so that makes us the second largest publicly accessible mocap studio in the U.S. As far as technological advancements or our capabilities on that front, we're the very first motion capture studio to acquire the Vicon FX40 camera system. And so it is an extremely technically advanced system. That basically is a 2.5 to 3 to 1 ratio of the previous gen system.
Which then, why is that a differentiator?
Well, for us, it's a quality of the data. So it's ultimately that's what our clients care about. They care about that the quality that they're getting is as pristine as possible. So they can take that data, they can rig that and apply that data to the characters that they use in their games, their episodic content for television, or the theatrical presentation. And so that's number one. Number two is how many people we can have in space at any given time and still maintain the quality of data that other people traditionally do with one actor in that space. So now you can get your mocap actors interacting with themselves in a manner that traditionally really hasn't been done before because the caliber of the hardware necessarily wasn't there or the software necessarily wasn't there.
So are there any advantages there to be able to run in 64-bit, either in the capture or the editing side?
Absolutely. For us, there's a significant advantage. Primarily what 64-bit space gives you is memory.
Sure.
It's the old saying back in Detroit when we were growing up in the 70s, there's no replacement for engine displacement. That's where we are with RAM, right? I mean, we need as much RAM as we can get, and a 32-bit platform just doesn't suffice anymore. We need a 64-bit platform. We need an 8, 16, 24, 32 gig addressable space to be able to crunch the mathematical data that we're having to crunch.
Very cool. Well, do you mind taking us, let's go look at the studio?
No, my pleasure.
Cool, thanks. So, real quick, who are you?
Kyle Williams.
And who else?
Shane Williams.
And so I got to ask Kyle, do you dress like this every day for work?
Oh, only when I have to.
So what are you wearing?
I'm wearing a mocap outfit right now. With all the mocap markers. And
it's basically one big, huge Velcro suit. So we had the hooks, the portion of the Velcro on the wall. He could throw himself against the wall and be stuck to it.
That'd be fun.
So, hell yeah.
Wasn't that a Letterman skit one night?
Exactly. I've done it before. But Kyle really loves wearing this. Like I said, he goes to happy hour like this, usually on Fridays. You know, any time at all possible, he tries to jump in this bad boy.
Why is this important to have the markers on there? What do they do?
Well, these markers are retroreflective markers. They basically are made with 3M retroreflective tape. A lot of people think they're electronic, but they're not. They're actually, they work off of an analog system. But basically, the markers have cameras in a 360-degree radius that basically shine down on these markers infrared and near-infrared light that bounces off these markers and directly comes back to the camera's CCD. Based on the calibration and the setup of the cameras, they actually know where those markers are in three-dimensional space. If you were to walk out here with night vision goggles, you would be blinded. It would just, this room is completely just soaked with nothing but infrared and red spectrum data, so you just it'd be really hard to see. They're just basically tracking these markers in three-dimensional space. We create relationships, IK relationships, inverse schematic relationships between these markers, which then basically they act as puppet strings, and they puppeteer your 3D, your CGI characters, either for film, games, or television. So that's pretty much in a nutshell what it does.
Tell us about the room that we're in. It's got a kind of a neat layout. Why are some of the cameras up here? Because the cameras are actually what we're seeing on film here is the red lights, right?
Yeah, you'll notice that there's some really bright red ones, and then there's some that are kind of dim looking. And the ones that are dim are near infrared. Mm-hmm. The majority of what it's shooting out of those, they're just as bright as the other ones. It's just their spectrum is beyond the human range, and so we can't see most of the light that they're emitting. The really bright red ones are just standard visible red, and those are used for bigger distances, bigger volumes. And what you're seeing right now, they're only at about 35-40% on the strobe intensity, so they could be much brighter than that. But it can be kind of painful to the actors, and the volume is not too large. So basically, the neat thing about this is once this system is calibrated, the computer knows not only where the actor and the points and all this stuff are in 3D space, but they actually know where part of the calibration is. They know where they are in three-dimensional space. They know their rotation. They know their position. They know everything they need to know about that camera. And so basically it's created a virtual volume within the computer And anything within that volume with reflective markers can be tracked in three-dimensional space. So.
Hey, so Kyle, let's see real quick. What does it look like with the markers and the cameras? I'm going to get over here behind the infrared real quick. Yeah, if you can move that. Let's see if we can get this guy to pick up. Oh, he's glowing.
Glowing?
Yeah, he's glowing. That is so cool. All right, so what? So help everybody explain. What am I showing them? Why is he glowing? Why does that matter?
These LEDs are, which this one here is the red spectrum. They actually are shooting rays out in straight lines, and you'll notice that you have to take your camera down to the
yeah. So if
angle,
I come up here, then he's not glowing anymore.
Exactly. Basically, how these cameras work is that they emit light, it hits that marker, and it bounces back straight into the camera's CCD. If they didn't do that and it wasn't based on true line of sight, there would be no way of accurately measuring where the markers are.
Well, yep. These are props, and basically they're built as minimalistic as possible. With motion capture, you want things to be invisible. You only use the bare necessities because at all times you want the cameras being able to see as much angles and perspective of 3D markers.
So why are you holding a piece of wood?
That piece of wood is—that's not a wood. Man, that's a smart gun. Come on.
Oh, you got to use your imagination.
Exactly. So this is a.
Because to the camera, it's just dots, right?
To the cameras, it's just dots, and then we later on tell the computer system though that this is a hard body object. It's a prop, and then it can be then moved around, and you'll actually even in real time you can see that thing is an actual smart gun. They would come up and they'd hide behind it. And then they turn around and they would shoot, and then they might go back. The thing is, even when they're behind the wall, we want to be able to track their back markers.
Oh, so you can't have a big solid object in front.
You can, but
those markers are now invisible to cameras, right? So the camera would lose tracking those. And so any of the props that we have created, Steve Hyde is our practical effects guy who creates all the props. Obviously, when you have walls or solid objects, you find a way to allow the cameras to see through them. So this is all the way you construct them.
What you're trying to do.
Little tiny little things.
This guy is really tiny, and they can be smaller than this.
Wow.
So.
And that compared to this.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, compared to that big old thing up there.
And there's even bigger ones. You know, it depends on what you're doing.
So you would put these on, like, small animals or...
You could go on your face. They could go on a spider. They could go on a bird. You have to glue it on the bird. But you'd get a fly in space and you'd get true, you know, accurate motion of a bird.
If you're going to do close-up faces, so we talked about briefly before that you could actually kind of capture that out there, but if you're going to do close-up, then is this what you would use?
The cameras are brought down, the ones that are near infrared. The ones that are red would blind the actor. Basically, the actor comes in here, and we glue markers, surgical glue, to the actor's face, and we're able to suck in the muscles and the eye twitches and all the basic mouth shapes that are made when a character's talking with markers that are extremely tiny, just like this. And these are basically semicircle markers that would be glued to the actor's face, and we would have them perform either lip sync a la Milli Vanilli, or we might actually record the real dialogue here in the studio for the actor. So kind of what you get here is what Disney has really been trying to do since the beginning of time with even the old cell animation. You watch the making of Aladdin and things like that. They talked about a camera recording Robin Williams as he was in there doing his dialogue, and the actual animators used his facial shape and his performance while recording that to draw the cell stuff. This is, in essence, doing exactly that, but it's not just drawing. It's taking in the actual everything that the actor's doing performance-wise with their face. So it's kind of the modern-day extreme version of what really animation companies have been doing for quite a few years. So.
Unbelievably bright this is on the markers. Because we're showing
at it. Yep, that is very cool. Well, those are really bright on too. Even after you turn it off, it takes for a second for it to... All right, so let's see how that is manifest in the real time. So what are we showing now?
So this is basically, you're seeing the skeletal data. You can...
You can query the system to say, hey, I want to see it as marker cloud data, where there. You wouldn't see the skeleton like you see right now. Mm-hmm. You just see it looks like a bunch of dots floating in space. So there's about three different views. Crispin, hit another view real quick so they can see it. Look how bright those are.
Yeah, so you can see in the back he has a mocap. He has a mocap suit, and he just dropped the marker. We just saw that happen. And there you can see on the screen. See what's happened. So here, Chris was able to kind of take the mesh, take the data, and start to move it around and manipulate and get different views. So what are we looking at?
You're looking at a real-time feed from the system. The system is looking at Kyle, and we've taught the system Kyle's proportions. And so in real-time, it knows that that's Kyle and automatically labels all his markers, which is why you see all the different sticks and colors, because it recognizes his body parts. In fact, Kyle, walk out of the space and come back in. And here's even a skeletal version. Some bones. He'll walk out. And it'll stop. He's out of the space, so it stops tracking him, and the markers disappear. Now, if he walks back in, the system will eventually, there he goes, it recognizes him and goes and starts tracking him again. It says, oh, that's Kyle, and it puts the skeleton back in him.
The cool thing about that is we can have three or four actors out there, and can then all be different sizes and proportions, and the minute they walk in, the right puppet would go to the right actor. So basically, it's that intelligent. It knows it based on the measurements and all the proportions, who's who.
And how unique they can be, even just from a quarter of an inch, a sixteenth of an inch, whatever, from maybe the length of an arm, a length of a leg.
Good deal. So isn't that's kind of a differentiator for y'all, right? I mean, being able to capture multiple actors at the same time?
Well, to the degree that we can do it, for the resolution that we can do it in, what would differentiate a one motion capture system from another is not only how many characters you can do at one time, how clean that data is that you're capturing at any given time, but also how close the characters can interact with one another and have the system still have extremely clean data. So with this system, with the Vicon FX series, we can do more than if someone has a previous gen or two gens removed of that many actors in the space at the same time with data that clean.
And the markers are unlabeled, so yeah. that's what the system sees as they're constructing, so that's his.
So it's able to just take what essentially to us is a bunch of dots, but it's able to take all those and put a skeletal frame to it?
Correct, because we've taken that and labeled all those and taught it what all those pieces are. And once you teach it, it remembers, and I can turn it on, and it recognizes them instantly.
So out of that... out of the teaching, how much of that is where you have to do by hand, or is this you use some kind of software that's able to do that?
Yeah, it's an.
Or is that some super secret sauce?
It's the super secret, the Louisiana hot sauce. do a T pose, Kyle. We start him in a T pose like that, so that it's kind of a known entity, and then we go through and we label all the. So we have a list of. Names for every single one of these, like back shoulder, right back shoulder, clavicle.
So you don't just randomly sternum, put them on?
No, clavicle, sternum, five on the head, left front, right back, blah, 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 all the way down to ankles, left metatarsal. 57 markers, I think, on him, and they each have a specific name, which makes sense, and we just label each one by hand, do that once, and once we do it once, we say, okay, that's Kyle, and the computer thinks about it for a moment and remembers it.
So I have to call out. I was just paying in when you talked. I see a start button down there. Is that really running Windows?
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is. Absolutely, it all runs on. It all runs on Windows platforms. Absolutely.
Very cool.
We actually get quite a few people that go, wow, isn't this something that you would normally see running on like a Mac or something? And we're like, absolutely not. The Macs have never run the software, and so I mean the. As far as the high-end 3D motion capture goes, it's always been a Windows-based platform that this stuff is run on. So.
Oh, so here we go. We get to see him with the gun.
So once again, same thing with the gun. You can just see the markers for the gun, but of course we've taught the system what the gun looks like, so it goes, oh, that's a gun.
To us, it's a neat piece of wood. Okay, so can we see how this, how the marker data and the skeleton gets turned into like monsters, and how, what's the next step after you start recording and capturing the data? What it, I mean, this is a lot of data, it would seem like, that you're capturing. How do you capture? Where does that go?
It initially gets stored as television data, because really what the camera is, here's what the cameras are seeing. That's all 24 cameras at once. We look at any individual camera, it's just seeing a two-dimensional view, because he is calibrated where I can turn off. So that's what each camera is actually seeing. It's just seeing an XY two-dimensional series of dots.
4 megapixel
at
image.
Four megapixels. And basically, it's, to oversimplify it, but it's true, it's basically a very complicated version of triangulation math geometry. It's like if you have a known entity, a camera, a known entity, a camera in an XYZ space, and they're shooting out rays on an XZ grid. If this dot is here and that dot is there in the other camera, they're calibrated together, the two rays meet, and it knows where the spot is. It's like GPS, kind of like.
Yep.
It's triangulation, basically. Very complicated triangulation, but that's what each camera is actually seeing. It's just a bunch of the two-dimensional view. So that's what actually gets recorded. In real time, it's crunching the numbers, and in real time, reconstructing the view on the triangulation and showing us what we've got here, what we record. This is a real-time simulation. So because it is real time, even though it is fairly perfect, it's bound to little errors, blinks, you know, things like that, because it is, you know, happening frame by frame. So we capture the raw data, then we, after the fact, take it and turn that into, reconstruct that in a more perfect fashion into the dots. From there, those become a really good paradigm example. Explanation would be that you've got an actor. We put markers on him. The person, the actor, is moving those markers around on all those different joints. We record those markers. Now in the computer, we have the markers minus the actor. Then we hook up those markers to our character in the computer, and now the markers are driving the computer character. The four markers on the hand, instead of him pushing the markers around. Now the markers are like a puppet, or pushing around the character in the computer. That's really the basic paradigm. It's a very simple one.